There's a point in many people's lives when they are asked to memorize a poem or a speech or a passage and to later recite it. Why? Hello and welcome to Didion Hawthorne in the In-Between, or DHNI. I'm your host, Mackenzie Gentz, and you're listening to our podcast about the relevance of literature in the 21st century. Now bookmark that book, and let's begin. Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu unserem Podcast. Today, we are going to talk about a topic that I've been fascinated by for years, and that is memorization. The interest in memorization for me goes all the way back to my childhood. As a child, I was very invested in music, which at that time involved a lot of memorization in terms of our education system. Fortunately, memorization has always come very easily to me because I'm a synesthete of the variety of hearing color. Synesthesia is a phenomenon that allows individuals to associate sentences with one another that are not normally associated with one another. Some people, for example, can taste colors that they see. Suffice to say that I see colors when I hear music, and sometimes also when I look at or hear words. Thus, when I memorize, a huge strategy for me is being able to see a sequence of colors to go to, much like the game of Guitar Hero. Fast forward to March 2020. I made the memorization one of my early quarantine projects, as I wanted to memorize passages and poems that meant a lot to me. The idea was so that I could always have them with me, that I would think in different ways about and have different relationships with those works that I so cherished. My actual memorization period during quarantine ended up being from April through August, and I'm going to perform two pieces today on the show from memory. Of course, due to the nature of podcasting, I have no way to prove that I am actually performing them memorized, other than to suggest that you can often tell the difference between reading aloud and recitation by the familiarity and the cadence of words being spoken, so watch out for that. The translation for the poem that I will later recite in German, as well as any sources we use in the episode today, will be linked at relevanceofliterature.com/notes under the show notes for this episode. Before we get into my memorization process and why I decided to focus on memorization after so many years away from it, I want to present the argument for memorization in education, as memorization was a staple in education from the ancient Greeks until the invention of the calculator, the mass production of textbooks, and yes, the invention of the internet. The ancient Greeks were the first to employ the quote-unquote art of memory, which was a system that taught students how to memorize rote information of great quantity and varying dimension. This system flourished in early universities, but also in the Christian church, where monks used the techniques to memorize the Bible, as well as to memorize supplementary materials like psalms and devotionals, and it was in the church that the system was largely preserved through the Renaissance era. See the Daniel Kylov reference in the show notes for more detail. Today, modern educators favor skills like critical thinking and, quote, the capacity to mine external records of information such as books and the internet, unquote, over memorization of other related skills. Again, look at Daniel Kylov. But what are the consequences of this fundamental shift? Certainly, an unprecedented consequence is that humans, especially those in schools as well as in higher education, are accountable for much more information than was ever required before. And to boot, we also have access to worlds more information than anyone 100 years ago could have predicted. Another consequence comes about when students are not taught skills like mental math in earlier stages of their lives, because the advent of very advanced calculators has made mental math less quote-unquote needed in standard education. But skills like mental math are said to aid in building pattern recognition as well as problem-solving skills, because the brain uses its stores of memory to grapple through problems of logic, meaning that the consequences of not teaching mental math could be more wide-reaching than they might first appear. Note here that rote memorization of mathematical equations and concepts without the accompanying understanding that goes with those equations and concepts actually proves detrimental to students rather than helpful. More on this distinction in a minute. The article from Daniel Kailov, linked in the show notes, notes that, quote, a key principle of all memory techniques is association. Skilled mnemonists are masters at recognizing and creating connections between things, unquote. An area that might not seem very important at first, but when one accounts for the rise of and need for generalists in the current workforce, it is indeed quite valuable. Rote memorization, as the MIT study from Richard Meyer called Rote versus Meaningful Learning cites, is evidently not that effective in a classroom setting, meaning that the cold memorization of historical dates, people, and locations that was often asked in history classrooms, just to give an example of yore, probably should not be brought back in the same form in modern education. The kinds of memorization that do prove useful are the kinds of memorization involved in, for example, language learning, where one must memorize the word for wall as die Wand in German in order to build associations with and understand that term. In other words, for memorization to prove useful, according to the research, it must be critically connected in some way with understanding. Excerpt from the White Album by Joan Didion, memorized in late August. We tell ourselves stories in order to live. The princess is caged in the consulate. The man with the candy will lead the children into the sea. The naked woman standing on the ledge outside the window on the 16th floor is a victim of accident, or the naked woman is an exhibitionist, and it would be interesting to know which. We tell ourselves that it makes some difference whether the naked woman is about to commit a mortal sin, or is about to register a political protest, or is about to be, the Aristophanic view, snatched back to the human condition by the fireman in priest's clothing, just visible in the window behind her, the one smiling at the telephoto lens. We look for the sermon in the suicide, for the social or moral lesson in the murder of five. We interpret what we see, select the most workable of the multiple choices. We live entirely, especially if we are writers, by the imposition of a narrative line upon disparate images, by the ideas with which we have learned to freeze the shifting phantasmagoria, which is our actual experience. After focusing so heavily on memorization every morning for about 6 months of the year this year, I'm a huge fan of the benefits that I received. First, the more you memorize, the better you get at memorization. Of course, this point is rather intuitive. The more you exercise muscle X, generally the stronger muscle X becomes, but something that I witnessed firsthand is how often I need to use my memory in real life. Let me draw out a few examples. Something that used to happen to me all the time, especially during quarantine, was that I would walk into a room in my house and immediately forget what I walked in that room to do. Nowadays, though, I'll ask myself what I walked in the room to do and immediately remember. So I find in this silly first example that I waste way less time being frustrated with myself about little memory things. I also sometimes do screenless Saturdays where I don't touch a screen for the entire day, and on those days I used to really struggle with remembering all I needed to do without my Pomodoros or handy reminders that pop up seemingly every hour. Nowadays though, I'm generally able to organize my to-dos in my mind, meaning that I rely way less on technological crutches than I used to, which for a technophobe like me feels wonderful. And the biggest thing for me is the improvement that I've seen in my memorization over time. The first poem, which I will recite at the end of the episode, that I memorized, is really long, but it took me months and months of daily practice to finally get it memorized. The White Album excerpt that you just heard took me a week. Now, more practically, I am memorizing a lot more music for my music degree, and I find that one, it takes me 2 to 3 days to memorize what I need to, and two, that active memorization has helped tremendously with my pattern recognition in music, as well as with my ability to perform, because now when I'm performing something, there's nothing between me and the audience. Some strategies that I have used in my season of memorization include compounding, where you say the first line of the text or poem. We tell ourselves stories in order to live. We tell ourselves stories in order to live. The princess is caged in the consulate. We tell ourselves the stories in order to live. The princess is caged in the consulate. The man with the candy will lead the children into the sea. Where you memorize the first line, then you memorize the first and second and third, and it gets better and better as you go through it. Another is order focus. Especially in very long poems like the one I'm about to recite for you, the ordering can get quite tricky between the lines of the poem, and so when you're memorizing, especially the end of one stanza, going to the beginning of the next stanza, I will often change and look at the order of focus, so I'll say something like, Und die Pfütze das Meer aus das Kind. Und die Pfütze das Meer aus das Kind. So in the poem, every stanza starts with as das Kind Kind war. And when I'm building in those transitions, especially in the middle of tricky verses, I'll make sure to pair them together in a way that they're unmistakable from each other, almost like they're the same line, so that I can really, really get down the ordering. And in that way, it sort of acts like a metric displacement strategy, where you're changing the stress of the lines in the sense that the next line of the first stanza or the first line of the first stanza isn't as emphasized as maybe it would normally be, and maybe it might be when you actually perform that particular piece. Also, using techniques like changing the voice quality or volume or technique, sometimes if there's a really hard set of vocabulary or something of that nature in a German poem or in an English poem or whatever I'm trying to memorize, I'll change my voice quality so that I can memorize it faster. An example would be, Als das Kind Kind war, wurde es am Spinat, an den Erbsen, am Milchreis und am gedünsteten Blumenkohl. So in this stanza, it's about the things that the child will not like. He'll make this like face and he'll sort of go bleh when he encounters these foods. And when I first was memorizing the poem, I didn't know the word wurte, the verb. And so I would say wurte, I would say it really angrily, and then I would say wurte, you know, really like peacefully and quietly. And that technique really helped me ingrain the meaning of that verb so that as I was creating a technique and a vision for what that stanza was going to sound like once the whole poem was memorized, I was playing around with it and I really was ingraining the meaning again of that word in context. Sectioning out the poem, I definitely see the White Album text, for example, in a couple different sections. The first section is the We Tell Ourselves Stories in Order to Live section, where she's outlining different scenarios. The second section is when the text changes to include a more general perspective. We Tell Ourselves is the first line of that second section. We tell ourselves that it makes some difference. And then it goes sort of into all of these different ways of looking at how society confines itself and in interpreting these different scenarios that she outlines in the first section. Third section is We Live Entirely, the last sentence. And it goes a little bit into the later parts of the chapter of the book when you look at We Live Entirely. And it's such an interesting progression between these three sections that I just identified, because throughout, what Didion is doing is making observations in the form of statements, might I add. So it's not I'm suggesting, Joan Didion isn't saying, I'm suggesting that these things are the case. She's assuming that those things are the case and asserting that those things are the case. And so the progression between these potential storylines that we can look at in this fictional realm versus the actual reactions and potential thoughts or moods behind those fictional storylines. And then she goes to essentially the broad perspective of how we live and what consequences essentially come from that way of living. And it all stems from these initial fictional storylines. And so I love that progression, but I think it was also important for me in learning it to have those different sections in mind and to be able to practice those different sections individually and see how my tone might change, how my goals in that section might change as a performer. Consistency is super important in any kind of practice, no matter what you're doing. If you want to become a better cook, if you want to wake up at 4:30 a.m., if you want to drink the right amount of water every day, consistency is going to be your most valuable tool. And for me, I had to do this every day. I never missed 2 days in a row. Matt D'Avella calls that the two-day rule. And I found that to be super informative for me. Along with that, though, I would say that knowing when to go full force and when to take a break is super important for this kind of skill. Because as you're building a consistent practice, there are going to be some days when you know that your practice is going to hurt you more than it's going to help you. And so acknowledging and having sort of a self-care mindset on those days was important, at least for me, giving myself the mental space and the mental breath in order to process that line or that section of the piece that I was working on, and then going to it the next day and saying, okay, what have I accomplished in the background over the last 24 hours, 48 hours? I find also knowing about the work and knowing the work more intimately in terms of the history and the background of it is important just to give the right tone and the right credit and the right cadence to the passage. And that's not saying there's one right cadence or one right way to perform it, but I do think that there are ways that are informed or perhaps motivated by the history of the piece. So, for example, I'm very familiar with Joan Didion's work. Clearly, I have a podcast named after her. I've read almost all of her work. And knowing the significance of that opening line of The White Album, which is one of her most famous books, it's certainly her most famous book of essays, knowing about that significance sort of gives me a sense that the passage needs to be performed with weight and needs to be performed with an idea of how transformative and how mind-blowing that passage actually was when she published the book. Also, I would say, and this goes in line with one of the strategies that I said earlier, thinking about the relationship between the words and the relationship between the sentences. It's often the case that the words or the ordering or the sequence of a sentence or of a line might surprise you. And I would take that surprise and that novelty and turn it into something that interests you. And that interest will lead to a faster and deeper memorization. And so there's a lot of times, especially in the German works that I memorized, where I was surprised by the word order or I was surprised by a slight infringement on the grammatical conventions. Or maybe I was surprised by a contraction that I'd never seen before that was dialectical. All these things you can use to serve as indicators in your practice. And when you're going over and performing an actual work, oftentimes what I find is that I have these little, almost little marks or blips in my brain where I think, oh yeah, that was the interesting line right there. So again, using the things that interest you about the poem and about what's different about that work and using that to your advantage. Lied vom Kindsein, von Peter Handke, memorized between April and July. Als das Kind war, ging es mit hängenden Armen. Wollte der Bach sei ein Fluss, der Fluss sei ein Strom und diese pfützte das Meer.
als das Kind Kind war, wusste es nicht, dass es Kind war. Alles war ihm besiegt und alle Seelen waren eins. Als das Kind Kind war, hatte es von nichts eine Meinung, hatte keine Gewohnheit, saß oft im Schneidersitz, lief aus dem Stand, hatte einen Wirbel im Haar und machte kein Gesicht beim Fotografieren. Als das Kind Kind war, war es die Zeit der folgenden Fragen. Warum bin ich ich und warum nicht du? Warum bin ich hier und warum nicht dort? Wann begann die Zeit und wo endet der Raum? Ist das Leben unter der Sonne nicht bloß ein Traum? Ist, was ich sehe, höre und rieche, nicht bloß der Schein einer Welt vor der Welt? Wie kann es sein, dass ich, der ich bin, bevor ich wurde, nicht war und dass einmal ich, der ich bin, nicht mehr der ich bin, sein würde? Als das Kind Kind war, wurgte es am Spinat, an den Erbsen, am Milchreis und am gedünsteten Blumenkohl und ist jetzt das alles und nicht nur zur Not. Als das Kind Kind war, erwachte es einmal in einem fremden Bett und jetzt immer wieder erschienen ihm viele Menschen schön und jetzt nur noch im Glücksfall stellt es sich klar ein Paradies vor und kann es jetzt höchstens ahnen, könnte es sich nichts nicht denken, und schaudert heute davor. Als das Kind Kind war, spielte es mit Begeisterung. Und jetzt, so ganz bei der Sache wie damals, nur noch, wenn diese Sache seine Arbeit ist. Als das Kind Kind war, genügten ihm als Nahrung Äpfel, Brot und so ist es immer noch. Als das Kind Kind war, fielen ihm die Bieren wie nur Bieren in die Hand. Und jetzt immer noch machten ihm die frischen Walnüsse eine raue Zunge. Und jetzt immer noch hatte es auf jedem Berg die Sehnsucht nach dem immer höheren Berg und in jeder Stadt die Sehnsucht nach dem noch größeren Stadt. Und das ist immer noch so. Griff im Wipfel eines Baums nach dem Kirschen in einem Hochgefühl wie auch heute noch. Eine Scheu vor jedem Fremden und hat sie immer noch. Wartete es auf dem ersten Schnee und wartet so immer noch. Als das Kind Kind war, warf es einen Stock als Lanze gegen den Baum. Und sie zittert da heute noch. Alright, that is the end of our episode on memorization. I will see you in the comments section. Feel free to leave an email or a comment on the show notes or at relevanceofliterature@gmail.com. And that is all for today's episode. See you on Monday. I don't know about you, but I am a sucker for unboxing videos. I'm a minimalist, okay, but I like it when other people unbox stuff because everyone benefits. I get to see a cool new wow product without having to collect more stuff, by the way, and they get to keep that stuff for themselves or give it away, whatever. Win-win. But recently, I have been trying my hand at my own bookish unboxing videos because, let's face it, I buy and read a lot of books. If y'all want to get your foot in the door and have access to my unboxing videos and also some upcoming giveaways, because I'm still a minimalist, please help me out here. Join our Patreon at patreon.com/relevanceofliterature. If you enjoyed the discussion and would like to hear more from us, there's a show and a series for everyone, so I'd recommend checking out our website, relevanceofliterature.com, under the ongoing series tab for links to our entire back catalog of episodes. We also have a couple of open surveys that you can find through the links in the description, so if you have 3 minutes while you're waiting in line somewhere, we would very much appreciate your feedback on our show. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode, and we'll see you next time.